Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On May 30th, Slate published the Black Film Canon, a list of the 50 greatest movies by Black directors. The authors enlisted the help of a panel that included scholars and critics and directors, including Henry Louis Gates Jr., Wesley Morris, and Ava DuVernay. And what emerged is a list of films stretching from 1920 all the way up to 2016, including comedies and dramas and documentaries. We're so glad to have with us Aisha Harris, a staff writer for Slate, who co-wrote the Black Film Canon feature with Dan Coyce. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Linda.
The first thing that I want to ask you, I think when you see something referred to as a canon, the first question is often, why a canon?
Right. I mean, it's kind of an icky word, isn't it? Or it's a dangerous word, I think, to throw about. But yeah, I mean, for us, part of why we wanted to call this a canon is because part of this, the reason we made this is stems from the Oscar so white conversation. And then that's obviously been a big thing. But now that that's sort of subsided in the months since the Oscars ended, we also kind of wanted to look towards these other canons that cinephiles are way more interested in. So if you look at Sight and Sound or the AFI lists or like Times 100 lists, like those are the sort of things that people look at as cinephiles that they appreciate and consider to be worthy of sort of worshiping at the altar of. And I think that those sort of canons are just as white or at least just as not Black as the Oscars can be. So that's kind of why we wanted to put our own stamp on it and say, hey, there are these great Black filmmakers. There always have been great Black filmmakers. So let's point you guys in this direction and kind of broaden the scope of what we consider great.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I was thinking about, I think very often when people are talking about anybody who's been underrepresented in any field, people who think they're helping will say it's because of various societal factors that Black people haven't made movies.
Exactly. I mean, it's definitely the case that that has limited, obviously, the amount of movies that have been created by Black people and told by Black people, which is why if you look at our list, like we have, I think there's probably about 14 different films that are directed by Black women on our list. And a lot of those Black women have not directed that many films. Some of them have only directed one or two films in
right.
their entire career.
Right.
So that's definitely a thing. Like it is true that there has always been adversity when it comes to being a person of color and trying to make films. But even through that adversity, there have been shining examples of people being able to triumph over that.
Yeah.
The earliest film we have is Oscar Micheaux's Within Our Gates, which is from 1920, and that directly was an answer to D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation. So there are examples of filmmakers. You can go back almost 100 years and see this great, powerful filmmaking from Black filmmakers.
Yeah. How did you decide that you wanted your focus to be Black directors as opposed to a focus on subject matter? I noticed, for example, Spike Lee's 25th Hour is on there.
Right.
And the actors are largely white. As you mentioned in the piece, there are a lot of movies that are beloved and or respected that are not there despite the fact that the people in them are Black, but the directors are not.
Right. Because I think when you talk about representation in film and TV and everything else, yes, it's important to have those stories. And I love some of those movies that are not necessarily directed by a white person, but maybe a Black person wrote the script, or sometimes it just stars Black people. Obviously, Sidney Poitier is nowhere to be found on our list, unfortunately.
That's really interesting.
Harry Belafonte, Carmen Jones is not on the list, The Wiz. But the thing is that we wanted to make this about Black people being able to tell their own stories.
Mm-hmm.
And even a movie like The 25th Hour, that's still Spike Lee putting his stamp on a story. You know, I wish we could have included even more films by Black filmmakers that aren't necessarily about or starring Black people.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't shake out that way. But there's the great thing about all of this conversation is that everyone's pointing out, you missed this, you missed that. Well, that means that there are way more than 50 great films to choose from, right?
Right,
so.
Right. How did you think when you were putting together this list about the other aspects, whenever you're putting together any kind of canon, thinking about all the elements of like, do we have enough women on this list? Do we have enough queer filmmakers on this list? How did you incorporate that thinking into kind of your list making?
It was definitely something that was always in the back of our minds. We tried our best to get as many suggestions as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that was why it was great that this was such a collaborative project, because like myself and Dan alone, obviously, like we brought some stuff to the table that others didn't. But then there were so many different movies. One of the films that I'm glad got on and I got to see for the first time was the Watermelon Woman. And one of our scholars, I'm trying to remember who recommended it now. I think it was Paula Massoud. She's a film professor. And she recommended the film and I checked it out. And I was like, this is a really great, like, small indie film. It's directed by a black lesbian filmmaker named Cheryl Dunier. It's from the mid-90s. It has this very, like, mid-90s feel. And it's playing with all these different elements of, like, faux documentary and also sort of drama and a little bit of comedy. And so we really wanted to try and get as much representation as possible, and not just beyond women or LGBT, but also try to incorporate the entire African diaspora, right, which is really difficult to do because there's so many filmmakers and so many directors that didn't wind up on the list, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that people are pointing it out to us on Twitter and elsewhere because, you know, I'm going to go seek out those films too, and then hopefully other people will.
Yeah.
But, you know, with any canon, there's going to be things left out.
It's so much to take on in a list of 50 films. It's an enormous challenge to try to incorporate all of those, you know, all of those kinds of breadth.
Yeah, it was very rough.
Yeah. So to get into kind of the nitty-gritty of your list, one of the things that I thought as I was looking at your list and then I saw that you also talked about in your introduction to it was that there are films on this list that aren't what I would think of as typical canon-y kinds of films. Mm-hmm. To me, it was sort of thrilling to see a movie like Love and Basketball, which is one of my favorite movies of any kind by anyone, which is a 2000 romance, which I adore. And the still that you chose, by the way, to illustrate that movie, which is these two basketball players icing each other's injuries, kind of snuggled up, is such an amazing scene. And I was so happy to see it because it's a romantic drama, essentially. And very often you don't see romances in canons. I think the same is true of comedies, like Friday is on there, and sports movies like Creed is on there. And it's really cool to see things that are kind of genre, stuff like that. Can you talk a little bit about when you were trying to figure out what kinds of movies you wanted this canon to cover, how you thought about it?
That was definitely, I'm glad that that came through because that was something that we specifically strove for. It was that we didn't want this to be like a very stodgy, every film has to be high art and, you know, perfectly crafted and beautiful. Like we wanted to include films that had like a very significant cultural impact as well. And a lot of those movies are not high art. They are shaggy. The acting might not be the best. It might not be a perfect movie. But like a movie like Love and Basketball, you'd be surprised. Actually, quite a few of the directors we pulled listed that movie in their top five for us. And I think Robert Townsend actually said something very similar to what you said, which was that, you know, it's so rare to see like a black romantic drama. Mm-hmm. And so there's something beautiful about that. And that movie has like totally stood the test of time. I feel like there are so many people who that's one of their favorite movies.
Oh my gosh. I tell people all the time, go watch that movie. Because I watch a lot of romantic comedy, and people say, when people talk about romantic comedies, I often try to nudge them over. I say, it's not a romantic comedy, but go watch Love and Basketball because it's like the most romantic movie ever.
Yeah, it has like some comedic elements, but like it's definitely and I also just like the fact that it's that rare movie. Like I'm definitely not a sports person, but like I appreciate it that it's that rare movie that like actually shows like what it's like to some extent to be a woman in sports.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it's got like so many great elements about it, and it just is really great.
It is. I really love that one. What are some others that you particularly love on this list?
Waiting to Exhale was definitely me rallying for that to be on the list. Mm-hmm. That's another movie. It's like very much a genre movie. It's a quote unquote woman's film. But to me, like I view it as sort of a modern day Sirk film, like Douglas Sirk. It wasn't very well reviewed when it came out. And I will say like some of it has not aged as well as it could have. There's some like kind of iffy homophobic tones in one part. At the same time, culturally very significant. And I love the fact that it is all about the women and their perspectives. And I just think that a movie like that deserves to be like looked at again through modern day eyes.
Yeah. And what would you say are kind of a couple of the hidden gems on this list for you that maybe people aren't as familiar with?
One in particular I would love people to check out is Leslie Harris's Just Another Girl on the IRT. It's a sort of a shaggy indie comedy from the early 90s, and it's about a young teenage girl in high school in New York City, And it's very 90s, like it's super 90s, the lingo, the dress. It's the rare film that is from the perspective of a young Black teenage girl. And she's just really smart, but she gets herself into trouble sometimes with how smart or how smart alecky she can be. So that's one film I would definitely recommend people check out. I feel like it's definitely fallen under the radar since it premiered. And if I'm remembering correctly, Leslie Harris, I think that's still the only feature she's made to this date. Mm-hmm. And that was like over 20 years ago. Another film that I discovered, thanks to some recommendations, was Sankofa, which is Haile Jarima's movie. That's also from the early 90s. And it's a movie about slavery. And, you know, slavery is it's a touchy subject,
yeah,
especially among Black Americans. And even I get weary of slavery movies. 12 Years a Slave is obviously a very visceral movie that I think awoke a lot of white people to how terrible it is. And Sankofa kind of gets at that, but I also think it gets like even more into the emotional aspects and the sort of politics of slavery than 12 Years a Slave does. And I just think it's also very little seen and it's hard to find, but if you can find it, you should definitely seek it out. It's an excellent film.
Fantastic. Aisha Harris, thank you so much for coming to talk to us about this.
Thank you. It was fun.
We will link to the Slate Black Film Canon and to the video compilation, and you can come find all of that at npr.org. Thanks again.